You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast. The Sick Podcast. With Tony Maradero.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the ball!
Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoint, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est le bon, c'est le bon, et ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens, le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaBee.TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground. Your premier gaming destination. It's gonna be sick.
Marinero, the Sick Podcast on this Monday, March 4th. Hope you're all doing well. You're watching on YouTube. You're watching on Facebook. You're watching on Twitter. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you aren't watching on YouTube, tell your friends about it. It's absolutely free. And if you like the podcast tonight, like it, comment sick, share it with your friends. And go out and leave us a five-star review on Apple. It really is our way of feeling the love. The Montreal Canadiens, speaking of love, a lot of people love the way they played on Saturday night. And I would imagine, especially Marty St. Louis, Kent Hughes, and Jeff Gordon, because the Canadiens went head-to-head with the Tampa Bay Lightning the way they went head-to-head with the Florida Panthers a couple of nights before that. When all was said and done, they lost the game in a shootout, yes. But once again, they competed. And at this time of the season, knowing that they're not going to make the playoffs, you have a bunch of players with long-term deals that some players on some teams would normally pack it in. You have other players who are just having a bad season and would probably normally pack it in. Well, the Canadiens don't have everyone going because some players are not having great seasons. But for the most part, they don't really have too many passengers. They're going, they're working, they're competing. And I guess that's pretty good news for that culture that they say they're trying to build and really put forward here. So the Sick Podcast, our partners, our sponsors, I'll start with Energy Transportation Group. I'm going to go to the people behind me here, which is take a look at the fridge, LaBee.TV. I'm also going to go with Playground. I'm going to go with Accent Insurance Solutions. And I'm going to go with these guys right here. Top of the evening to you. The episode is brought to you by St. Patrick's Day, Shamrock Shavers, Manscaped. This year, don't just chase rainbows. Make your own pot of gold and groom your little leprechaun with the leaders in below the kilt care. Say goodbye to your clover forest with Manscaped Lawnmower 5.0 and let your confidence shine bright. Embrace the luck of the Irish and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Head over to manscaped.com and use code Montreal for 20% off and free shipping. That is, happy shaving, everyone. By the way, you won't get cut. I know, I've tried it. It's unbelievable. The others cut, Manscaped does not cut. All right, without further ado, let's bring him in from Sportsnet at sportsnet.ca. I wonder if I gave him some ideas about his leprechaun, but if I did, Eric Engels, Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. All right, You're laughing as much as Stu Cowan did the other day when I did the Manscaped plug. All right. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, man. That was a great rant off the top there. I give that 5 stars on Apple for sure.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. All right. Okay. There's so much to talk about that I don't even know where to start, to tell you the truth. But I know that Marty St. Louis earlier today at practice, and of course, the Canadians are in Nashville, where they're going to visit the Nashville Predators tomorrow night. He was asked about players who could possibly be getting traded, asked about David Savard, asked about Tanner Pearson, asked about Jake Allen. Tanner Pearson was asked about trade rumors involving him. Jake Allen was asked about the possibility of being traded to a cup contender. David Savard was asked about the possibility of being traded. Marty St. Louis was asked about the progression of his group. He was asked about Alex Newhook. List goes on and on. We're going to get to all of that, but I feel like we got to go back here for a second, if we can, and go back to Saturday night, that game in Tampa. I'll start with Caden Primo, I find that when Primo's in the game, he's in it right away, and you can tell right away. The one weakness that he has, well, he's got more than one, but the one thing that I think he has to work on is his ability to shut out a bad goal and not let it affect his game. I don't know if I'm right or wrong here. It just seems to me, from the outside, that when he gives up a bad goal, a second or a third might come, and sometimes they might come in a hurry. On Saturday night, I found that Caden Primo, who wasn't perfect, as a matter of fact, at the end of the game, he thought that he should have been more patient on some, but really, can you blame him on any of the goals? I mean, they're players that are left alone in front. I thought he did really well.
Yeah, not really. And like, you got to credit the Lightning too. They're desperate to pick up points in that game. And the Canadians played such a good one in Tampa Bay. It was just really impressive after the game coming off Florida. I think what Caden has done, and I don't disagree with what you just said about him, which I think is also normal given his experience level in the NHL and, you know, his age. He's 24. It just looks like goalies, you can go across the board, and there's a couple of exceptions with guys like Igor Shesterkin, but like, how many of these guys really pop before 26? Like, there just aren't that many. One thing that I think Caden Primo has done, and especially as you look back at his last few performances, especially the one against Tampa Bay, he's really undone the narrative that this year hasn't been good for his development. Like, you could look at the games played, the appearances or whatever it is, and say, oh, you know, like, this is a disaster. He's only been in 14 games. He's tracking towards playing 20 games this season in the National Hockey League. And if you had asked him that at the beginning of the year, what would you prefer? 20 games? You're only going to start 20 games in the NHL, or you're going to play 55 in the American Hockey League? He would have, without hesitation, said, I'll take the 20 in the NHL. And, you know, you add in 135 practices, you add in all the personal time spent on and off the ice with Eric Raymond, the goaltending coach, who I think has done a really good job in Montreal. This is a goalie that has unquestionably gotten better. So this narrative that the three-goalie system has destroyed him and it's been the worst thing for him and it needs to be resolved immediately and this and that, I think he's undone it. And that's noting what you just did, Tony, that yes, sometimes a bad goal gets by him and it gets in his head a little bit. Like, we saw two of his performances for sure where that happened to him. Has it been all of them? Not really. And he's had some performances that were absolutely excellent. Like, you think of the first 7-8 games that he played, he was really good.
Listen, I don't think it's been terrible for him, but I don't think it's been ideal for him either. I think it's game was his third start in the last month. I mean, if it would have been him and Montembeau here, he wouldn't go one game every 10 days. He would play more games. They would not have to have goalies taking turns in practice and facing certain shooters. So he'd probably end up facing 33% more shots in practice. List goes on and on. But the one point that I found was very interesting. And this happened on La Poche Bleue last week on Thursday. I happened to be a collaborator for the show. And on that particular show, they had Alain Chenier, former scout of the Anaheim Ducks, currently with Tivaspor. They had Kevin Poulin, former goaltender, of course, for the Laval Rocket, who was part of a goalie tandem with Caden Primo, and myself. And right before I went on, Kevin Poulin talked about Caden Primo. And he said that there's an adjustment to be made there because Marco Marciano doesn't have the same techniques and philosophies that Eric Raymond does. And I found that extremely intriguing because, you know, we've heard this for the longest time, Eric, that what NHL teams try to do is they try and have the same philosophy in the American Hockey League as they do in the National Hockey League. So like that players are comfortable that when they get called up, the transition will be smooth and easy. And so I figured if it was that way for players, it'll be that way for coaches. Now, look, Eric, I don't know how much Eric Raymond and Marco Marciano talk or don't talk. I don't know how much they exchange or don't exchange. And I don't know how much different their philosophies are. Maybe they talk every day and maybe their philosophies are extremely comparable. But Kevin Poulin, who would know a thing or two about it, said it's a different goalie philosophy and there's an adjustment to be made for Caden Primo, which I thought was a great point and would explain a lot of things.
Yes, and while that was true, going back about a year ago, Kevin Poulin was still around with Laval and Montreal. Like, you have to understand that Eric Raymond isn't the director of goaltending for the Canadiens. He's the Canadiens goaltending coach, and Marco Marciano was working with the goaltenders in Laval. And differences in terms of the way they approach coaching, you know, you could look at that and say, well, that could be a problem. Or you can say, okay, they just have their own styles or whatever it is. But that has been an adjustment. Eric Raymond has kind of taken an initiative with this season and touching a bit more with the goaltenders in Laval. And obviously the work he's done with Primo was to adjust a few ways he needs to play in the National Hockey League that are different than the way you would need to play in the American Hockey League. So Kevin was right about something needing to be adjusted there in terms of the work with Primo. And he was right that, you know, you probably want to have as strong a link as possible between NHL and American Hockey League, in which Eric Raymond has taken the initiative, despite it not being his job, to touch on a little bit with Val, working with Jacob Dobish and the goaltenders down there, and, you know, having a bit more of an influence so the process is a bit more streamlined. And that's kind of an example of the way things are running in the Canadiens organization in general. You know, you just see there's a lot more harmony in the front office, you know, all across the organization since Jeff Gorton has come in. And you know, it's not built in a day, obviously. It's something that takes time. And it was a good point that Kevin made and obviously had that experience from within the Canadiens organization. But also it's interesting you brought it up because I was speaking with Eric about it this week. While on the road, he's a super guy, Eric Raymond. He's a really interesting guy, very smart guy, doesn't give away too much, doesn't really give away anything in terms of the secrets, in terms of how he does his work. But he does provide some important insight in terms of, you know, how he works. And it was interesting to hear him talk about specifically that topic now that you bring it up.
All right. When the Canadiens started the season with the three goalies, there were some who said, okay, so they probably started the three goalies because Montembeau is in a contract year and they probably don't want to give him as much as he would want, and they probably want to use it against them in negotiation. Others said, well, you know, they probably don't want to lose Caden Primo, and if they feel if they send them, if they put him on waivers, they're going to lose him. But, you know, a lot of people said, okay, so maybe they're showcasing Primo. And maybe they're going to trade Primo. Now, for me, I never bought that. I always bought the Canadiens are rebuilding. They're going to want to keep the youngest goalie between Primo and Allen. They're going to want to keep the younger one. They don't know what Primo's ceiling is. He's nowhere close to it. Allen has already obviously reached this season, his ceiling, and he's on the decline. And for me, it was always an automatic that they were going to keep Primo and trade Allen at some point. I mean, I think you were on the same page, but I mean, is that a foregone conclusion at this point that it's 100% set in stone? They're keeping Primo and they're going to end up trading Drake Allen, whether it's at the trade deadline or whether it's in the off season or whether it's next season. That's the plan. So is it a foregone conclusion at this point?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
No. I think it's dangerous to suggest anything's at 100%. I think the one thing that you could suggest as a foregone conclusion is that they won't have three goaltenders with the team next season. But the probabilities stack very highly in terms of what you were just talking about, that it would be Jake Allen who moves and not Gaydon Primeau. But 100%, no, I wouldn't say that. You know, it really depends. There are teams out there that might look at Gaydon Primeau and be willing to pay a pretty good price to get him. And we'll see what the Canadians do if that comes in before they're able to move Jake Allen. Like, you're definitely right. The probability heavily stacks towards Jake Allen being the man out. And I don't think there's really much concern about moving him in the offseason if he doesn't move between now and Friday. But, like, I'll give me an example. Like, look at a team like Philadelphia and what they've done this year, and all of a sudden they don't have Carter Hart, and they have an opportunity to get a young goaltender who's right at that critical stage. Like I said, they don't really pop till they're 26. He's 24. He, you know, yes, you were right before too. The Canadians would have liked to have gotten him a bit more experience, and I think you'll see between now and after the trade deadline if Gaydon Primeau remains with the Canadians, which is, again, a very high probability based on that equation you were just talking about, that he'll probably start a little more frequently than, you know, they'd like to at least get him to 20 games, which is not the end of the world if that's what it ends up being. We'll see where it goes. If you go back to the start of this whole thing, they didn't have Montembeau under contract, and they weren't about to lose Primeau for free in that situation and be left with two goaltenders, and, you know, one who could potentially be gone at the end of the season like that, and one who's being claimed off waivers. So that was, you know, the main reason for the three goalie thing. But the other thing is, like, they were perfectly willing to just see what happens with these guys. Who's going to stand out and prove themselves? And Montembeau stepped up and did that. And Primeau has also stepped up and shown that, you know, he can be potentially a good backup in this league. And maybe over the next couple of years, he'll do what Montembeau did and show that he could be more than that. So we'll see where it all goes. But yes, you're right. Like, the probabilities slant, I wouldn't put it 100%, but slant way more towards Jake Allen out the door. I think everybody knows that by now.
Yeah, I would think that the Allen family are expecting a trade. Let's hear from Jake Allen, who was asked about it earlier today, about the possibility maybe to be traded to a cup contender.
I think that I could have another shot for a cup. Is that a part of you?
Yeah.
Think about that?
Oh, I always think about it. I just had that taste of being part of a team. You know, obviously I felt I was very fortunate, because that's the way I look at it. I think a lot of guys go with their career and they don't even get an opportunity to do it. And it's not their fault. It's not that they're great players. It's just situational based. And for me, I've already been a part of it once, but, you know, I'd love to be a part of it again, but I also would love to see this team win a cup in the future.
There you have it. Jake Allen, I'd love to be a part of it again, but at the same time, I'd love to see this team win a cup in the future. Unfortunately for him, wrong time to have a bad season.
Yeah, listen, it definitely hasn't been his best. I think
it's been his worst, as a matter of fact.
I know you mentioned it a few times. Statistically, his worst season. I get it. I think there's multiple factors in that. It's funny, like, for all the concern of how the three goalie system was going to affect Gaydon Primeau, and again, I think his performance has shown it hasn't affected him nearly as much as people were so concerned about. The guy who it's obviously had the biggest effect on has been Jake, and he's been He has not complained about it for a single second. And, you know, he is more accustomed to being in the backup role and starting less. But this has been a challenging year in terms of practice, in terms of sitting games in the press box while somebody else is the backup, do all that different stuff. And you have to realize, like, since the beginning of the year, he has been mentioned in trade rumors and asked about it day after day after day.
Oh, it's got to be tough.
I know people don't, you know, yeah. Again, he has been the consummate professional. He has not complained about any of this. He has been a total stand-up dude. He has not gotten upset at all about being asked about it. But you're right. He's got a young family. He loves Montreal.
No, it's got to be tough.
He loves what he's been doing with this group and how much he has helped as a veteran presence. We talk about David Savard and give him a lot of credit for that. Like, Jake is an incredible leader with the Canadians, a guy who's willing to call it the way it is, a guy who holds people accountable, but a guy who also acts as like a big brother of sorts. He's so highly respected on the team. And I just, it's a part of the way things have gone for him performance wise of what he's had to deal with. And he could play better, and he'd be the first person to say he could play better. And I think the thing that I see watching Jake play is it's been a bit of a mixed bag within the games themselves. Like, you've seen some unbelievable saves and then a goal that gets by and that shouldn't. And it just speaks to him being in a different type of rhythm than he's ever had to face throughout his career. But you speak to any guy in this league who has played with Jake Allen, and they will have nothing but incredible things to say about him as a teammate. And if a team out there, that's why I think, like, we're talking about the potential for him to get traded between now and Friday, Tony. Like, it will be predicated on how a team views how supportive of a teammate he is and how nothing has really changed in terms of what he could provide in terms of reliability as a backup goalie. With a solid team in front of him, a guy who could really support one of the young number ones in the league on a team that's a contender. There's a limited market for teams that
need
that type of thing. And it kind of dried up as the season went along with other teams correcting, right? Like Edmonton. So we'll see. And then, like, you look at another team that would have been a great target, like New Jersey. You know, it's gone so bad that they fired their coach. They've done everything late. They should have addressed goaltending earlier in the season. They didn't.
Yeah.
Their coach, they should have probably done it earlier in the season. They didn't. And now, you know, you're looking at a team that's way too good to be missing the playoffs, and they're probably going to. So that's, I think, the situation that's been for Jake Allen this year.
Eric, I'm sure everyone's heard by now, but if you haven't, what Eric was alluding to, of course, is that earlier this evening, the New Jersey Devils relieved head coach Lindy Ruff of his duties and the promoted associate coach, Travis Green, to the spot of to replace Lindy Ruff. So there, you know, it's all downhill. I'm going to say, I know this is not a Devils podcast, but I want to say something. The Devils were really impressive last year, like really, really impressive, but they really surprised me. I didn't think they were on as good on paper as they actually played. And they looked like they took like four steps forward from the year before. And this year it almost seems like they took 3.5 steps back. So part of me actually thinks it's normal. You got to feel for Lindy Ruff in a way, who had his most experienced defenseman hurt for very long gaps of the season. He hasn't had a number one goaltender. Jack Hughes is number one centerman and one of the best players in the National Hockey League, hurt for an extended period of time too. But at the same time, he wasn't in Nico Hischier. He didn't have the answers, and he wasn't good for some young players like Alexander Holtz. Mind you, Tom Fitzgerald probably fires Lindy Ruff because he figures, you know what, if I don't fire this guy, I'm probably going to be next, so I got to do it now and probably save my own job. He wouldn't be the first GM to do that. He won't be the last. But anyway, so we'll continue to monitor the Devils situation and see what they're going to do with their goaltending situation. Back to Allen, I wonder if his future in regards to whether or not he's traded on Friday, how big this game for him tomorrow night will be.
Listen, it's a great question. I think it's a bit of a misnomer that your value hinges on one performance or another, to be honest with you. It's scouts know the players. Like, let's take it away from Allen for a second and put the focus on Yoel Armia. right?
Mm-hmm.
Joel Armia, you would agree, Tony, 3 months of hockey that this guy has played is the best hockey he's played since the 2021 Stanley Cup run for the Canadiens. And that you go back to that run, he was an extremely impactful player who made a big difference in them being able to succeed. And you
I
go,
agree with that 1,000%. 1,000% I agree with that.
Yeah. Through these 3 months, he's been that player. Like, he just consistently, in fact, I would even say this 3 month run is the most consistent hockey he has played in his NHL career. Like, which is the entire, you know, like, nobody's going to show up at the game tomorrow in Nashville. And if Joel Armia has a dud, say to themselves, well, okay, he's still the same old Joel Armia. They're going to look at the 3 years prior to this, the 2 years prior to this, and they're going to say, there's a chance he's still that player who's kind of disappears when you need him and this and that, and you can't understand why he doesn't do better with what he has. And they'll say, well, maybe, you know, the Canadians kind of view him that way too, and they'll lowball the Canadians, saying, here's a guy who's finally not figured it out to the point where he's ever going to be anything that much better offensively than he currently is, but figured it out that he could be more consistent and provide the value that he actually does on his contract, and we'll get him for really cheap and even get the Canadians to pay for him. And like, again, it doesn't hinge on one game or another. Usually the sample size has to be big enough that you know who a guy is. And when it comes to guys like Jake Allen and Joel Armia, the scouts know what those guys are at this point. They know what they can do, what they can't do. They don't go to a single game. They're not parachuted in for a single game and saying, what do you think? And then they go, well, you know, in this game, he just didn't have it. So, like, forget that idea. So, you know, they build a book on players over years and years and years. And they don't, you know, they look for little deviations to see if there's a pattern that emerges. That's basically how it works. So they're not going to read too much into how Jake plays tomorrow or how Joel Armia plays tomorrow. They want to view it in terms of what it means in the bigger picture of their career and the big book that they've already filled on them.
Yeah. So listen, I don't know if I'm going to talk to you on Friday, which is trade deadline day in the National Hockey League. I know I'd like to. I would imagine you're going to be extremely busy all day long. And by the time it gets to my podcast, you're probably going to be dead tired. The invitation is there if you're available. But having said that, it'll be past the deadline, and this is going to be my last opportunity to ask you before the 3 p.m. deadline. And we'll go one player at a time here, but we're talking about Jake Allen right now. Do you think Jake Allen gets traded on Friday?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. If I have to go, you know, like if you're asking me for a sure answer, I'll say I don't think so. You know, like, all the names that we're going to go through now, it's really kind of 50-50. And I think the biggest factor in that, Tony, is that they have one retention slot, as everybody knows, one ability to retain salary in a trade. Yeah. And everything is predicated on their ability to do that, you know, with teams so tied up against the salary cap, right? So mm-hmm. I think you're likely looking at some action from the Canadians on Friday. But a lot of it is going to depend on who they can retain money on, which player they choose to do that with. And then everything falls from there in terms of their ability to move the other guys out and what they do.
All right. Okay. On that note, let's talk about Tanner Pearson and let's bring him up. Here's Tanner Pearson earlier today on his name and trade rumors.
Read the papers and everything, or...
No, I keep out of it. If they start thinking about it, you know, it could kind of mess with you a bit. Been in a couple over the years, so I've had my fair share, and I've been moved a fair share of times too. So, you know, rumors are going to be rumors until it actually happens or something happens the way it is.
Is it tough to deal with that? I mean, are you all human?
Yeah, I think, you know, we got two young kids at home and a family and whatnot. So, you know, maybe when I was, you know, younger, it's a bit easier. But definitely with the kids at home, you know, not really knowing, that's the crappy part of the business. But I think we all understand it's, you know, the one side of the business. And everyone loves it, obviously, for a good reason, but it happens.
Tanner Pearson acquired via trade by the Canadiens earlier this season, of course, and he had some hand injuries. And unfortunately for him, when you're in the final year of your contract, you want to try and stay as healthy as possible and have as good a season as possible so that, A, you probably end up moving on, and or B, end up signing a new contract either with that team or the team that you get moved to, or any other team for that matter. So he had an injury that set him back probably at the wrong time. Luckily for him, he's able to come back before the deadline. He's played some pretty good games as of late. It's been not bad, Eric.
No, listen, I asked Marty St. Louis if there's one guy we're looking at in the team and we're maybe missing something or he's not spoken about enough, and he said Pearson. Like, the guy, you look at his details, and it's very easy to miss because you don't look, you know, not all of us are trained to look away from the puck and look at all those things that are happening. It's a little easier to do when you're in the rink, and, you know, since Marty said it, pay closer attention to it, and he's playing good hockey, man. Like, and, you know, speaking to a couple of scouts about him, just asking, I have no leading questions at all. Just, what do you think of Pearson? He's a pro. He's positionally in the right places. You could tell he grew up in Daryl Sutter hockey, and he does things the right way. That is Tanner Pearson's reputation. They don't view him as a guy who was on a Stanley Cup winning team. They view him as a guy who won a Stanley Cup. And whether or not that means that he'd be moving, I tell you, it would be pretty much a guarantee if he wasn't making $3.25 million, given the role that he's likely to play on a contender or a team that's trying to make the playoffs or a team that's trying to secure its playoff position. But I think, again, it comes back to that retention slot thing. And if the Canadiens aren't able to retain money on him, I'm not saying it's impossible he can't move, but I don't see it as likely. So, and I do have a name in mind of a player that is going to move with retention involved. And if that happens, that kind of narrows the window to move Tanner Pearson out. But I will tell you, teams see the value in the player.
Hold on a second.
The value would be higher. The value would be higher, Tony, if it wasn't with a $3.25 million price tag.
Okay. So you think the Canadiens are going to move out of, did I understand correctly, that they're going to move out a player on Friday on the deadline and retain some money on the contract?
Yes. I think so.
So you said, so it's not going to be Allen.
I don't think
so. Now you're saying it's not going to be Pearson.
I don't think it'll be Pearson.
I don't think it'll be Armia either.
I don't think it'll be Armia. And I don't think that would be a wise choice either in terms of what you get back and what the value is of doing that.
Are you thinking David Savard?
Yes, I am. I think there's a stronger chance that David Savard moves than stays here beyond Friday. And I think it's because when you look at that market for right-handed defensemen, you know, there's a reason that Lyubushkin was the second guy to go after Tanev. There just isn't that much available on the market that really moves the needle and is worth what David Savard could potentially provide as value to whichever team that gets him, not only on one run, but two. And I think... Yes, Kent Hughes has set a high price for David Savard, but if he's willing to eat 50% of that contract and knock him down to a guy who makes $3.5 million to half that, and then another team comes in, as we saw in the Tanev and Lyubushkin deals, and picks up 25% of the deal too, the value is there. And I think those market forces will likely make it that David Savard ends up on another team between now and Friday. And if they don't, if those market forces don't make it that way, Kent Hughes will be perfectly fine with holding on to David Savard. But we've been through enough of these to know kind of how they go. And I really think there's got to be, there's a couple teams that I could think of that the need is strong enough for them to say, you know what, we're going to pay this price. We're going to get this player at a very cheap number on our cap, and he's going to help us.
So listen, I wouldn't be shocked if Savard's moved. All right. They actually converted, or they moved Gouley from left defense to right defense this season. And I think that may have been part of it. Okay. And at one point they don't have a lot of right-handed defensemen here. Right. So they have, Jonathan Kovacevic, obviously, and they have Justin Barron, who was down with the Laval Rocket, and they have Gouley, who was converted to right D, or playing right D, not converted, but playing. You have David Savard. So you don't have that many. You do have Reinbacher, who's going to join the team probably in the last month of the season, probably. I wouldn't be shocked if Savard's moved. But I think that once he goes into the final year of his contract next year, like Tanev was in the final year of his contract, he will be more attractive to other teams. Now, what you just said, well, they're going to
eat I disagree with that. I think I would amend your statement. I would say that as he goes into the final year of his contract, there will be more teams that could be in on a player like him if he's available at the deadline. But I don't think he'll be more attractive to teams than he couldn't than he could be right now, even if that market is a little more limited in terms of the teams that can take on another year of David Savard. But again, take on another year of David Savard at 25% of his salary. Again, that's what I'm talking about. You gotta understand those market forces, right? Like the need that's in the market for the player and the ability to get him for a couple of runs instead of just one. And the ability to do that at potentially 25% of his salary, because as we've seen, the GMs in this league are pretty creative in terms of making those things work. That is where the value proposition becomes stronger than it probably would be at this time next year when he's now is he 33 or 34? It's
33.
Yeah, so he'll be 34.
And look,
and who knows what happens next year? Because if the I'll tell you one thing is certain. The Canadians want to be a lot more competitive next year than they are this year, and they're going to have an opportunity to do that naturally with the players gaining more experience and the culture that's been kind of built up this year, regardless of what their record says, and with some offseason opportunities that they're going to have with the assets that are at their disposal. That David Savard, if he sticks around beyond this deadline, I would suggest that the chances become much stronger. He stays with the Canadians through the term of his contract and he moves at next year's deadline.
And you know what? It would make sense if he was moved in a way, because Kent Hughes keeps on telling everyone that he's not planning to trade David Savard. But, you know, Kent Hughes is not going to tell you that he is planning on trading David Savard. So he's probably thinking, you know what? If I say I'm not planning on trading him, if anything to his value, it could probably only help it. Okay. Do you see him as a fit on a particular team? More so than another team?
Listen, I think the Toronto Maple Leafs could really use David Savard. Like, I know they just got Lyubushkin. I know Lyubushkin's hurt and he'll be back. They could still really use David Savard. I think the Winnipeg Jets would see value in having a player like David Savard. I think the Vancouver Canucks wouldn't mind having a player like David Savard. I think you can go through a number of teams in the league and look at them and say, well, he could actually really help them. Maybe even his old team in Tampa Bay could use a player like David Savard when you look at four of their six defensemen. The real question is who's going to be able to pay the price to get him and, you know, grease the wheels to make sure that he ends up with them instead of somebody else. I think he can help a lot of these teams. Toronto would probably be top of my list in terms of teams that would have the incentive to go get that player.
Jeez, I wouldn't trade David Savard to Toronto. Could you imagine they end up winning the Stanley Cup? Can't use it, get crucified.
That's the game we're in here. I mean, Vancouver and Calgary completed a bunch of trades this year, you know, recently. Or you had players also moving before those trades were done. Not necessarily a bunch of trades, but made a trade this year, right? Like, players were in Vancouver and signed with Calgary. Before all that, if you look at Markstrom and Tanev, and this stuff happens.
Yeah.
It's just the way it's got to be with the system as locked up as it is. And I don't know if there's a premium for dealing within your own division. Kent Hughes right now, again, he's not – I wrote it in my piece today, previewing the deadline. If you want to think of an image of Kent Hughes at the – up to the deadline, picture him just kicking his feet up on the table of the Canadians war room and just waiting for the phone to ring. He's not going to go out there and actively kind of try to produce markets for players. He's already moved Sean Monahan, which was the big piece that he had to move. He got a first round pick for him. Now he just sits back and says, there's not a single guy I have here that I absolutely have to move. So you guys want these players, you know, pay for them. Like, otherwise he stands pat, because like I said, they want to be a lot more competitive next year, and they're not going to sit there and say to themselves, well, David Savard won't make us more competitive this year if he stays here. So that's what it comes down to.
Marty St. Louis was asked earlier today, Marty, are you prepared to lose David Savard via trade? Let's hear from him.
Qui vend. Et pas les équipes qui achètent, ce qui est votre cas. Comme entraîneur, est-ce que faut se préparer peut-être à dans l'éventualité où tu peux perdre un joueur que tu aimes, comme David, par exemple?
Est-ce non, ça fait partie de la business. Tu sais, puis c'est un côté plate de la game, tu sais, parce qu'on est tous humains. Puis moi, comme je l'ai dit avant, j'ai toujours adoré mes coéquipiers, puis comme entraîneur, j'adore mes joueurs. Fait que c'est le côté humain, il fait ça difficile quand tu perds des gars.
C'est tantôt le jeu. All right, there you have it. Marty St. Louis with the whole, it's part of the business, right?
Yeah, it's part of the business, and it's hard for a coach to deal. Like, he wasn't happy to see Sean Monahan go, you know? Especially with how versatile Monahan was for the Canadians and how much Marty St. Louis trusted him in different situations, to the point that he was playing him 19 minutes a game. You know, David Savard played like 26 minutes in Tampa. Now, a lot of that had to do with that penalty kill at the end of the last game, but like, he relies on this player. He doesn't just rely on him to mentor the kids. He's an important player here. Is he playing above where he would be with somebody else? Yes. Is he proving that the value he could provide might be worth it to a team out there? Yes. And that's an eventuality and a reality that Martin St. Louis has to deal with and has to plan for. Whether or not it comes to pass, we'll find out between now and Friday. But yeah, he's gotta be realistic about it. And it helps when you have as much experience as Marty does. He knows the deal, right?
Eric, Marty knows that he has a young team, and that young team this year, there's trends, right, where they just make the same mistakes often and sometimes pretty much around the same time, and it ends up costing them. He was asked about his young team making those mistakes earlier today. Let's hear from him.
As-tu un élément peut-être d'expérience là-dedans qui rentre en ligne de compte?
C'est sûr qu'il y en a. On fait des erreurs de jeune équipe, c'est normal. Tu regardes les deux matchs, c'est des scénarios similaires. Mm-hmm. Tu sais, on est en avantage numérique, puis on fait un revirement en entrée de zone. Puis, tu sais, ces affaires-là, c'est tellement plus facile à corriger qu'à bâtir ton power play, qu'est-ce qu'il y a l'air. Tu sais, fait que tu sais, c'est des growing pains.
L'apprentissage
douloureux. Mais tu sais, si tu m'aurais dit au début de l'année,
I would have said des douleurs d'apprentissage, but then again, you know, I don't know. But I would trust their French a lot more than I would trust mine. But Marty St. Louis, there he talks about, he gives an example, Eric, of some of the mistakes, and he says, when I see that an entry that goes bad on the power play and it leads to, you know, an opportunity for the other team or a goal against. And Marty, by the way, talked about that on a couple of occasions today, that he's really happy with where his power play is. He would really have loved to have cut down on the goals against to win on the power play. I believe the Canadians have given up 10 goals when they were on the power play. But at the same time, he added that if I would know that my power play was as good as it was, I would take that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with the point. The other thing you got to consider, obviously, and Arpan Basu was asking this specifically to Mike Matheson today, like in those situations, you're up a goal in a game and you get a power play and an opportunity to get a 2-goal lead with 10 minutes left in that game. Obviously, you know, you don't look at that opportunity and say, okay, let's be passive and let's make sure we don't create a turnover here. You try to be as aggressive as possible and score a goal that gives you a 2-goal cushion with 10 minutes left in a game. So it's a tough balance to strike, right? If you want to correct those errors, and Mike Matheson said they talked about it before the Tampa game, so it was particularly frustrating to give up a shorthanded goal in that situation after the game in Florida, and have this kind of trend continue doing that. You also don't want to just kind of neutralize yourself and say, like as Matheson said, it's not like we're denying the power play when we get it. Like, you know, like it's an important opportunity for us to take advantage of, and you hope that the game isn't cruel to you, and it goes, you know, a turnover happens like that that ends up in the back of your net. But I think, to Marty's point, like you'd rather go for it, and you'd rather have a power play that looks as well-oiled and confident as that first unit of the Canadians have, that they're willing to make take on a certain amount of risk, knowing that the numbers are on their side in a man advantage. So they'll figure out a way to be I don't even want to use the word careful, because it's not the word that you want to have when you're looking at an opportunity to get a 2-goal lead instead of one late in the game. But just be double sure, maybe avoid a blind pass. Like Suzuki's pass wasn't fully blind, but it wasn't fully guaranteed for him when he spun and made it, right? Like, and he like never does that. When do you see Suzuki give up a cookie like that? Like it's not just rare. It's like never. So,
yeah. All right. We haven't talked about Kovacevic and Harris yet, so let's do so now. The Canadians, we know, have a ton of defensemen, and there's a ton more on their way. At one point, they can't all play here, and some are going to have to be moved. And I think a lot of people are looking at, okay, David Savard will be moved either this year or next year. I believe he will be moved. I don't believe he'll be moved to the trade deadline. I think you believe he will be moved to the trade deadline. We'll see what happens there. I hope I'm right, because I bet a lunch with George Larac that he wouldn't. But then again, how much can tofu cost, right?
You'd be surprised.
Oh, really? I don't know. I never ate tofu before. Is it that expensive, really?
No, but it's delicious if prepared the right way.
Well, it's only money. The more I spend on George, the less I give to my wife. It's all good. All right, okay. So a lot of people seem to believe it's going to be Kovacevic or Harris that's going to be moved. If one of the two is going to be moved, who, in your opinion, will be moved and why? And do you think it'll happen here in the next couple of days?
Yeah, to kind of look at both guys individually, the first on Kovacevic, as you call him, as you properly call him, although I don't know why he's accepted that all of us call him Kovacevic. I think he thinks it's easier for all of us, but he is absolutely, his name is Kovacevic. If Savard moves, he stays. If Savard doesn't move, there might be a willingness to move him. And if there is, there might be a willingness to take him from some team out there that pays attention. He's got a 6'5 right-handed defenseman who makes pretty much the league minimum for this season and next. That has value to it.
Correct. So why would you move him? Think about it. So why would you just listen to what you just said, right? And by the way, I'm not the president of the Jonathan Kovacevic fan club, but he's a 6'5 right-handed defenseman making minimum money.
Well, you won't move him for nothing. You won't move him for nothing, right? Like, that's what I'm saying. If the offers don't come in for Savard, then Ken Hughes will keep him. If the offers then kind of juice up for Kovacevic at the end of, you know, as you get closer to where we get to the deadline and some team out there is like, we've missed on a few of these targets and this is a guy that we could use, he's steady. You have to consider what the value proposition is. He might be more valuable to the Canadians keeping him. They might see him as a guy who continued to bridge the gap between their young defensemen. So I would say it's not that likely. I'd say it's not that likely, but it's still possible. It's still possible that some team out there will say, you know what, this could be worth something to us, and we'll see what Kent Hughes could extract if it's really worth something. He's not a make or break player for the Canadians one way or the other. Like, he's a guy who helps now, who could help in the future, but doesn't hurt either way. But the question is, can he help another team more if they're willing to pay for it? Like, we'll find out.
I think he has an advantage on Harris, And I think Harris has an advantage on Kovacevic. I think the advantage that Kovacevic has on Harris is that he's a right-handed defenseman, and the Canadians have a lot more left-handed defensemen in the organization. Mike Matheson is one.
Yes.
Caden Gooley is another. Jaden Struble is another. Arbor Jack Guy is another. That's four who can play at the National Hockey League level, like, right away. That's four that can play right away. Adam Engstrom is another. And I don't know when he's coming over or when he isn't, but, you know, he's a pretty good prospect in the organization, a 20-year-old left-handed defenseman who's playing in Sweden. And if you take a look at the right side,
Lane Hudson,
pardon me, of course, who's coming, who's going to be signing before the end of the season. And then on the right side, you have David Savard, who's going to be moved at one point. You have Jonathan Kovacevic. You have Justin Barron. You have David Reinbacher. And you have Logan Mailloux.
Yeah.
I mean, you have more on the left side.
It is a numbers game. So, again, on my view, and I understand your view on this, my view is very simple. I think there's a more likely chance David Savard moves between now and Friday. But if he doesn't, I think it's more likely he rides out his contract with the Canadiens than he moves at any point. So I'm going to leave that there. Kovacevic, if David Savard stays through the deadline, potentially becomes available. So that's another thing. And I agree with everything you just said on the left side of Montreal's D, which makes Harris a guy who very much could be on the outs. And I've written about this at Sportsnet.
Yeah.
You look at teams that are retooling. The Calgary Flames have been playing the best hockey they played in a very long time. They moved Hanifin out. They're likely going to lose Hanifin in a trade. And those guys in that room who are battling as hard as they can would be pretty happy about an NHL-capable defenseman coming into their room between now and Friday. And that could be Jordan Harris. It's not like they'd get him for free. You know, they'd have to potentially give up a forward prospect or a pick to get him. But that's a player that helps them now. And clearly, when you look at the way they completed the deal for Tanev, they are interested in players that can help them sooner rather than later. Otherwise, they would have gone for a first-round pick and something else than the deal that they ended up taking. I wrote this back on February 9th for our trade board at Sportsnet that, you know, watch out for the Calgary Flames and Jordan Harris. Pittsburgh Penguins are another team I would look at retooling, hoping to get younger on the blue line. That's a team that should have interest in Jordan Harris, whether or not they do. There's some other teams out there that could be in retooling mode that could really use a player like that. And $1.4 million expiring in a year from now, and yes, he's got arbitration rights, I don't think anybody would be scared off by that number given the reliability of Harris and what he's proven as a player. So
by the way,
there's a chance he could move.
Have I ever mentioned to you what Christopher Letang told Max LaPierre? So he skated with the Canadians right before, like in the offseason, right? Or in early September. He's done that a couple of times. And he told Max LaPierre that Jordan Harris reminds him of a young Christopher Letang. Now, like, wow. Like, I would have never thought that. Not in a million years. I would have thought, you know what? Christopher Letang, different level, different offensive instincts that Jordan Harris doesn't have. A different shot, different vision, different everything. But, I mean, who am I to doubt what you know, Christopher Letang sees? That's interesting. The one, and I'll get to this, the one advantage that I think Harris has over Kovacevic is I think you look at Kovacevic and you say, he won't get much better. Like, he's very close to his ceiling. But I think you look at Jordan Harris and say, you know what? With some proper development here and some time in the National Hockey League and some experience, this guy could take his game to probably three other levels. And I don't know how big a jump those levels would be, but and they might not be big. But I think they look at Harris and say, you know, he's just scratching the surface. And Kovacevic is who he is. And I think that's the advantage that Harris has over Kovacevic. Without knowing this for a fact, I'll just finish with this. I think the management team are bigger fans of Harris than they are of Kovacevic.
Maybe. Look, I think the upside is a bit higher in Harris's case. I think Kovacevic, I'm going to keep calling him by his real name, deserves deserves the opportunity to keep growing as a player too, is his ceiling is probably a bit more limited. I think if you could see a consistent version of a bit of meanness in his game, his value mm-hmm. would be a lot higher. It's not like it's not there. It's not like he hasn't shown that he's willing to be I'm not talking about fighting every game either, but if he played with a bit more toughness in his game consistently, and I think there's room for him to do that, he becomes a harder player to take out of the lineup, given the other things he can do. He's never going to be the best player with the puck, but I think he's improved in that regard. Harris, I think, is already established his floor as a third pairing defenseman in this league. Like, he can play on the third pair of any team in this league and he wouldn't be out of place. I do think he has the potential. I don't know about jumping his game up three levels, especially on the offensive side. I don't necessarily see that, but I do see the level raising to the point where if somebody needed to rely on him as a number four on their team, he could get there. He could get there where it's not just he's spotlighting there and he's doing well, you know, when he's turned to, that he could become like an everyday number four in the league. I think he has that ability in terms of his skating, his puck retrieval, his positive actions and keeping possession, moving the puck up the ice, keeping the puck in the zone. There's little subtle things about Harris's game that are stable and solid, and the stuff that people look for. He makes a good first pass. He retrieves the puck more often than not. He's not scared to go back and get it. And his skating really helps him navigate the ice in a way that, you know, I wouldn't compare Chris Letang and Jordan Harris in the offensive elements, but in the skating and puck movement kind of things, maybe that's what he saw in him that other teams will see too. And it just, again, I don't think we'd be talking about Jordan Harris likely moving if not for the emergence.
Yeah,
Jaden Struble. But Jaden Struble has emerged, and you know, as I asked Marty about at the end of his, if he'd be available, the belief is that he probably would be come Wednesday. He's been dealing, you know, with some back issues over the last week or so, and I think they've just been taking their time getting him back in there. I don't know if he'll play against Nashville. We'll see. I think the trade deadline is another factor why he's not playing right now, but that's just my own personal theory because of all these.
I agree with you.
Parts. So
I agree with you.
We'll see what happens, but I want to say this about Jordan Harris. I have all kinds of time for him on the ice, but especially off the ice. Just a wonderful, like, young kid. He's a really smart, good person, and really interesting guy to talk to. And I think the upside is very much still there for him. I don't know how many games he's played in the league. Is it 100 or so? He's got plenty of room ahead of him to grow, like you said.
Eric, a lot of information there as usual, and a lot of logic as usual. I just looked it up, by the way. 112 NHL games for Jordan Harris, 1065, and this year 37. I think I got to most of what I wanted to get to. Whatever I didn't get to, I think we're at a racetrack here. We're going to go enjoy Nashville and enjoy the hockey game tomorrow night. And look, if you're not beat up and tired on Friday, and you want to pick up that phone for me, you're one of the people I'd like to reach out to for sure. So we'll see if we can make it happen. Talk to you then.
All right. Take care, Tony. Thanks.
Cheers, bud. All right. You too. A special thanks to our partners and sponsors, Energy Transportation Group, a leading full service logistics provider serving all of North America, driven to be different. Also, special thanks to Labitte de TB, brewed in Quebec, a winner of a dozen international awards. Labitte de TB offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. Labitte de TB, embrace your true nature. Also, special thanks to Playground. Discover a world of luxury at Playground. That was there on Saturday night, by the way, with my buddy Danny. Explore their new 30,000 square foot expansion with thrilling games, gourmet dining, and live entertainment. As a matter of fact, they even smoked a cigar. Shh, don't tell anyone. Located just over the Mercier Bridge. I'm 51 years old. My mother will kill me if she finds out. Only minutes from downtown Montreal. Playground experience the strip without the trip. And of course, brought to you in part by these guys here, Manscaped, and the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra for your leprechaun, that is. Special thanks to all of you for watching. Special thanks to all of you for listening. Special thanks to all of you for liking it and sharing it with your friends. Comment sick, S-I-C-K, S-I-C-K. And leave us a 5-star review on Apple. It's our way of feeling the love. We'll be back tomorrow night right after the Canadians and the Nashville Predators. By the way, special time. That one starts at 8 p.m. Doesn't start at 7 o'clock. Doesn't start at 7:30. It starts at 8, which means by the time we get on the air, it'll probably be give or take at around 10:40 p.m. and not 10 p.m. So I have a feeling it's going to be an abbreviated edition of the Sick Podcast tomorrow night, but it will be a Sick Podcast nonetheless. For Aniello, Sammy, and Juliana at Master Control, they're Cavallaro. I'm Marinaro.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.